"Lead the Lord Mithrandir to the housing prepared for him," said Denethor, "and his companion may lodge with him for the present, if he will. But be it known that I have now sworn him to my service, and he shall be known as Peregrin, son of Paladin, and taught the lesser passwords. Send word to the captains that they shall wait on me here as soon as may be after the third hour is rung. And you, my lord Mithrandir, shall come too, as and when you will. None shall hinder your coming to me at any time, save only in my brief hours of sleep. Let your wrath at an old man's folly run off, and then return to my comfort."
"Folly?" said Gandalf.
"Nay, my lord, when you are a dotard you will die. You can use even your grief as a cloak. Do you think that I do not understand your purpose in questioning for an hour one who knows the least while I sit by?"
"If you understand it, then be content," retorted Denethor. "Pride would be folly that disdained help and counsel at need, but you deal out such gifts according to your own designs. Yet the Lord of Gondor is not to be made the tool of other men's purposes, however worthy, and to him there is no purpose higher in the world as it now stands than the good of Gondor, and the rule of Gondor, my lord, is mine and no other man's, unless the king should come again."
"Unless the king should come again," said Gandalf. "Well, my lord steward, it is your task to keep some kingdom still against that event, which few now look to see. In that task you shall have all the aid that you are pleased to ask for. But I will say this. The rule of no realm is mine, neither of Gondor nor any other, great or small. But all worthy things that are in peril as the world now stands, those are my care. And for my part, I shall not wholly fail of my task, though Gondor should perish, if anything passes through this night that can still grow fair or bear fruit and flower again in days to come. For I also am a steward, did you not know?" And with that he turned and strode from the hall with Pippin running at his side. Gandalf didn't look at Pippin or speak a word to him as they went. Their guide brought them from the doors of the hall, and then led them across the court of the fountain into a lane between tall buildings of stone. After several turns they came to a house close to the wall of the citadel upon the north side, not far from the shoulder that linked the hill with the mountain. Within, upon the first floor above the street, up a wide carven stair, he showed them to a fair room, light and airy, with goodly hangings of dull gold sheen unfigured. It was sparely furnished, having but a small table, two chairs and a bench, but at either side there were curtained alcoves and well-clad beds within, with vessels and basins for washing. There were three high narrow windows that looked northward over the great curve of Anduin, still shrouded in mists, towards the Emyn Muil and Rauros far away. Pippin had to climb on the bench to look out over the deep stone sill. "Are you angry with me, Gandalf?" he said, as their guide went out and closed the door. "I did the best I could." "You did indeed," said Gandalf, laughing suddenly, and he came and stood beside Pippin, putting his arm about the hobbit's shoulders and gazing out of the window. Pippin glanced in some wonder at the face now close beside his own, for the sound of that laugh had been gay and merry. Yet in the wizard's face he saw at first only lines of care and sorrow, though as he looked more intently he perceived that under all there was a great joy, a fountain of mirth enough to set a kingdom laughing, were it to gush forth.
"Indeed you did your best," said the wizard, "and I hope that it may be long before you find yourself in such a tight corner again between two such terrible old men. Still the Lord of Gondor learned more from you than you may have guessed, Pippin. You could not hide the fact that Boromir did not lead the company from Moria, and that there was one among you of high honour who was coming to Minas Tirith, and that he had a famous sword. Men think much about the stories of old days in Gondor, and Denethor had given long thought to the rhyme and to the words Isildur's Bane since Boromir went away. He is not as other men of this time, Pippin, and whatever be his descent from father to son, By some chance the blood of Westerness runs nearly true in him, as it does in his other son, Faramir, and yet did not in Boromir, whom he loved best. He has long sight. He can perceive, if he bends his will thither, much of what is passing in the minds of men, even of those that dwell far off. It is difficult to deceive him, and dangerous to try. Remember that, for you are now sworn to his service. I don't know what put it into your head or your heart to do that, but it was well done. I didn't hinder it, for generous deed should not be checked by cold counsel. It touched his heart as well, may I say it, as pleasing his humour. And at least you are free now to move about as you will in Minas Tirith when you are not on duty. For there is another side to it. You are at his command, and he will not forget. Be wary still. He fell silent and sighed. Well, no need to brood on what tomorrow may bring. For one thing, tomorrow will be certain to bring worse than today for many days to come. And there is nothing more that I can do to help it. The board is set and the pieces are moving. One piece that I greatly desire to find is Faramir, now the heir of Denethor. I don't think that he's in the city, but I have had no time to gather news. I must go, Pippin. I must go to this lord's council and learn what I can. But the enemy has the move, and he's about to open his full game. And pawns are likely to see as much of it as any. Peregrine, son of Peladin, soldier of Gondor, sharpen your blade. Gandalf went to the door, and there he turned. I'm in haste, Pippin, he said. Do me a favour when you go out. Even before you rest, if you're not too weary, go and find Shadowfax and see how he's housed. These people are kindly to beasts, for they are a good and wise folk, but they have less skill with horses than some. With that, Gandalf went out, and as he did so, there came the note of a clear, sweet bell ringing in the tower of the citadel. Three strokes it rang, like silver in the air, and ceased. The third hour from the rising of the sun. After a minute, Pippin went to the door and down the stair and looked about the street. The sun was now shining warm and bright, and the towers and tall houses cast long, clear-cut shadows westward. High in the blue air, Mount Mindolowin lifted its white helm and snowy cloak. Armed men went to and fro in the ways of the city, as if going at the striking of the hour to changes of post and duty. 9 o'clock, we'd call it in the shire, said Pippin aloud to himself. Just the time for a nice breakfast by the open window in spring sunshine. And how I should like breakfast! Do these people ever have it, or is it over? And when do they have dinner, and where? Presently I noticed a man, clad in black and white, coming along the narrow street from the centre of the citadel towards him. Pippin felt lonely, and made up his mind to speak as the man passed. But he had no need. The man came straight up to him.
You are Peregrine the Halfling, he said. I'm told that you have been sworn to the service of the Lord and of the city. Welcome.
He held out his hand, and Pippin took it.
I am named Beregond, son of Baranor. I have no duty this morning, and I've been sent to you to teach you the passwords, and to tell you some of the many things that no doubt you'll wish to know. And for my part, I would learn of you also. For never before have we seen a halfling in this land, and though we've heard rumour of them, little is said of them in any tale that we know. Moreover, you're a friend of Mithrandir. Do you know him well?
Well, said Pippin, I've known of him all my short life, as you might say, and lately I've travelled far with him. But there is much to read in that book, and I cannot claim to have seen more than a page or two. Yet perhaps I know him as well as any but a few. Aragorn was the only one of our company, I think, who really knew him.
Aragorn, said Beregond, who is he?
Oh, stammered Pippin, he was a man who went about with us. I think he is in Rohan now.
You have been in Rohan, I hear? There is much that I would ask you of that land also, for we put much of what little hope we have in its people.
but I'm forgetting my errand, which was first to answer what you would ask. What would you know, Master Peregrine?
Well, said Pippin, if I may venture to say so, rather a burning question in my mind at present is, well, what about breakfast and all that? I mean, what are the meal times, if you understand me, and where is the dining room, if there is one, and the inns? I looked, but never a one could I see as we rode up, though I'd been borne up by the hope of a draught of ale as soon as we came to the homes of wise and courtly men. Beregond looked at him gravely.
An old campaigner, I see, he said. They say that men who go warring afield look ever to the next hope of food and of drink, though I am not a travelled man myself. Then you have not eaten today?
Well, yes, to speak in courtesy, yes, said Pippin, but no more than a cup of wine and a white cake or two by the kindness of your lord. But he racked me for it with an hour of questions, and that is hungry work. Beregond laughed.
At the table small men may do the greater deeds, we say, but you have broken your fast as well as any man in the citadel, and with greater honour. This is a fortress and a tower of guard, and is now in posture of war. We rise ere the sun, and take a morsel in the grey light, and go to our duties at the opening hour. But do not despair. He laughed again, seeing the dismay in Pippin's face. Those who have had heavy duty take somewhat to refresh their strength in the mid-morning. Then there is the nuncheon at noon or after, as duties allow, and men gather for the day meal, and such mirth as there still may be, after the hour of sunset. Come, we will walk a little, and then go find us some refreshment, and eat and drink on the battlement, and survey the fair morning.
One moment, said Pippin, blushing. Greed or hunger by your courtesy, put it out of my mind. But Gandalf, Mithrander, as you call him, asked me to see to his horse, Shadowfax, a great steed of Rohan, and the apple of the king's eye, I'm told, though he has given him to Mithrander for his services. I think his new master loves the beast better than he loves many men, and if his good will is of any value to this city, you will treat Shadowfax with all honour, with greater kindness than you have treated this hobbit, if it is possible.
Hobbit, said Beregond.
That is what we call ourselves, said Pippin.
I'm glad to learn it, said Beregond, for now I may say that strange accents do not mar fair speech, and hobbits are the fair-spoken folk. But come, you shall make me acquainted with this good horse. I love beasts, and we see them seldom in this stony city, for my people came from the mountain vales, and before that from Ithilien, but fear not. The visit shall be short, a mere call of courtesy, and we will go thence to the butteries.
Pippin found that Shadowfax had been well housed and tended, for in the sixth circle, outside the walls of the citadel, there were some fair stables where a few swift horses were kept, hard by the lodgings of the errand-riders of the lord, messengers always ready to go at the urgent command of Denethor or his chief captains. But now all the horses and the riders were out and away. Shadowfax whinnied as Pippin entered the stable and turned his head. "Good morning," said Pippin. "Gandalf will come as soon as he may. He's busy, but he sends greetings, and I'm to see that all is well with you, and you resting, I hope, after your long labours." Shadowfax tossed his head and stamped, but he allowed Beregond to handle his head gently and stroke his great flanks.
"He looks as if he were spoiling for a race, and not newly come from a great journey," said Beregond. "How strong and proud he is! Where is his harness? It should be rich and fair."
"None is rich and fair enough for him," said Pippin. "He will have none. If he will consent to bear you he does, and if not, well, no bit, bridle, whip, or thong will tame him. Farewell, Shadowfax. Have patience. Battle is coming." Shadowfax lifted up his head and neighed, so that the stable shook, and they covered their ears. Then they took their leave, seeing that the manger was well filled. "And now for our manger," said Beregond, and he led Pippin back to the citadel, and so to a door in the north side of the great tower. There they went down a long, cool stair into a wide alley lit with lamps. There were hatches in the walls at the side, and one of these was open.
"This is the storehouse and battery of my company of the guard," said Berigond. "Greetings, Targon," he called through the hatch. "It's early yet, but here is a new cupboard that the Lord has taken into his service. He's ridden long and far, with a tight belt, and has had sore labor this morning, and he's hungry. Give us what you have." They got their bread, and butter, and cheese, and apples. The last of the winter store, wrinkled but sound and sweet. And a leather flagon of new-drawn ale, and wooden platters and cups. They put all into a wicker basket and climbed back into the sun. And Berigond brought Pippin to a place at the east end of the great outthrust battlement, where there was an embrasure in the walls with a stone seat beneath the sill. From there they could look out on the morning over the world. They ate and drank, and they talked now of Gondor and its ways and customs, now of the Shire and the strange countries that Pippin had seen. And ever as they talked, Berigond was more amazed, and looked with greater wonder at the hobbit, swinging his short legs as he sat on the seat, or standing tiptoe upon it to peer over the sill at the lands below. "I will not hide from you, Master Peregrine," said Berigond, "that to us you look almost as one of our children, a lad of 9 summers or so, and yet you have endured perils and seen marvels that few of our greybeards could boast of. I thought it was the whim of our lord to take him a noble page, after the manner of the kings of old, they say. But I see that it is not so, and you must pardon my foolishness."
"I do," said Pippin. "Though you're not far wrong. I'm still little more than a boy in the reckoning of my own people, and it will be 4 years yet before I come of age, as we say in the Shire. But don't bother about me. Come and look and tell me what I can see."
The sun was now climbing, and the mists in the valley below had been drawn up. The last of them were floating away just overhead, as wisps of white cloud borne on the stiffened breeze from the east that was now flapping and tugging the flags and white standards of the citadel. Away down in the valley bottom, 5 leagues or so as the eye leaps, the great river could now be seen grey and glittering, coming out of the northwest, and bending in a mighty sweep south and west again, till it was lost to view in a haze and shimmer, far beyond which lay the sea 50 leagues away. Pippin could see all the Pelennor laid out before him, dotted into the distance with farmsteads and little walls, barns and byres, but nowhere could he see any kine or other beasts. Many roads and tracks crossed the green fields, and there was much coming and going, wains moving in lines towards the great gate, and others passing out. Now and again a horseman would ride up and leap from the saddle and hasten into the city. But most of the traffic went away along the chief highway, and that turned south, and then, bending swifter than the river, skirted the hills and passed soon from sight. It was wide and well paved, and along its eastern edge ran a broad green riding track, and beyond that a wall. On the ride horsemen galloped to and fro, but all the streets seemed to be choked with great covered wains going south. But soon Pippin saw that all was in fact well ordered. The wains were moving in 3 lines, one swifter, drawn by horses, another slower, great wagons with fair housings of many colours, drawn by oxen, and along the west rim of the road many smaller carts hauled by trudging men. "That is the road to the vales of Tumladen and Lossarnach, and the mountain villages, and then on to Lebennin," said Berigond. "There go the last of the wains that bear away to refuge the aged, the children, and the women that must go with them. They must all be gone from the gate and the road clear for a league before noon. That was the order. It was a sad necessity," he sighed. "Few, maybe, of those now sundered will meet again. And there were always too few children in this city, but now there are none, save some young lads that will not depart, and may find some task to do. My own son is one of them." They fell silent for a while. Pippin gazed anxiously eastward, as if at any moment he might see thousands of orcs pouring over the fields.
"What can I see there?" he asked, pointing down to the middle of the great curve of the Anduin. "Is that another city? Or what is it?"
"It was a city,"
said Beregond, "the chief city of Gondor, of which this was only a fortress. For that is the ruin of Osgiliath on either side of Anduin, which our enemies took and burned long ago. Yet we won it back in the days of the youth of Denethor, not to dwell in, but to hold as an outpost, and to rebuild the bridge for the passage of our arms. And then came the fell riders out of Minas Morgul."
"The black riders?" said Pippin, opening his eyes, and they were white and dark, with an old fear reawakened.
"Yes, they were black," said Beregond, "and I see that you know something of them, though you have not spoken of them in any of your tales."
"I know of them," said Pippin softly, "but I'll not speak of them now, so near, so near." He broke off and lifted his eyes above the river, and it seemed to him that all he could see was a vast and threatening shadow. Perhaps it was mountains looming on the verge of sight, their jagged edges softened by well-nigh 20 leagues of misty air. Perhaps it was but a cloud wall, and beyond that again a yet deeper gloom. But even as he looked, it seemed to his eyes that the gloom was growing and gathering very slowly, slowly rising to smother the regions of the sun. "So near to Mordor," said Beregond quietly.
"Yes, there it lies."